coward. But I got up out of the chair and walked to the door, the Fairy Queen's heady perfume, the narcotic scent of her enough to make me a little dizzy. I fought it away and tried to keep the scowl in place, opening the door for her with a jerky motion.
"Your hand yet pains you?"
she asked. "What do you think?" Mab placed her gloved hand on my wounded one, and a sudden spike of sheer, vicious cold shot up through the injury like a frozen scalpel before lancing up into my arm, straight toward my heart. I took my breath, and I felt my heart skip a beat, two, before it labored into rhythm again. I gasped and swayed, and only leaning against the door kept me from falling down completely. "Damn it," I muttered, trying to keep my voice down. "We had a deal."
"I agreed not to punish you for refusing me, wizard. I agreed not to punish or harass you by proxy," Mab smiled. "I did that just for spite."
I growled. "That isn't going to make it more likely that I take this case."
"You will take it, emissary," Mab said, her voice confident. "Expect to meet your counterpart this evening."
"What counterpart?"
"As you are Winter's emissary in this matter, Summer, too, has sought out one to represent her interests."
"I got plans tonight," I growled, "and I haven't taken the case."
Mab tilted her dark glasses down, cat eyes on mine. "Wizard, do you know the story of the fox and the scorpion?"
I shook my head, looked away.
"Fox and scorpion came to a brook," Mab murmured, her voice low, sweet. "Wide as the water. Scorpion asked Fox for a ride on his back. Fox said, 'Scorpion, will you not sting me?' Scorpion said, 'If I did, it would mean the death of us both.' Fox agreed, and the scorpion climbed onto his back. Fox swam, but halfway over, Scorpion struck with his deadly sting. Fox gasped, 'Fool, you have doomed us both. Why?' 'I am a scorpion,' said Scorpion. 'It is my nature.'"
"That's the story," I said. "Don't quit your day job." Mab laughed, velvet ice, and it sent another shiver through me.
"You will accept this case, wizard. It is what you are. It is your nature."
And she turned and walked down the hall, aloof, reserved, cold. I glowered after her for a minute before I shut the door. Maybe I'd been shut away in my lab too long, but Spencer never mentions that the Fairy Queen has a great ass. So I noticed these things. So sue me. Chapter 4. I leaned against my door with my eyes closed, trying to think. I was scared. Not in that half-pleasant, adrenaline-charged way, but quietly scared. Wait on the results of medical tests scared. It's a rational sort of fear that puts a lawn chair down in the front of your thoughts and brings a cooler of drinks along with it. I was working for the Queen of the Wicked Fairies. Well, Queen of Winter, of the Unseelie Fairies at any rate. The Unseelie weren't universally vicious and evil any more than the Seelie, the Summer Fae, were all kind and wise. They were much like the season for which they'd been named, cold, beautiful, pitiless, and entirely without remorse. Only a fool would willingly associate with them. Not that Mab had given me much of a choice, but technically speaking, there had been one. I could have turned her down flat and accepted whatever came. I chewed on my lip. Given the kind of business I was in, I hadn't felt the need to spend too much time hunting for a good retirement plan. Wizards can live a long, long time, but most of the ones that do tend to be the kind that stick at home in their study. Not many tossed their gauntlets into as many faces as I had. I'd been clever a couple of times, lucky a couple of times. I'd come out ahead of the game so far, but sooner or later, the dice were going to come up snake eyes. It was as simple as that, and I knew it. Fear. Maybe that's why I agreed to Mab's bargain. Susan's life had been twisted horribly, and that was my fault. I wanted to help her before I went down swinging. But some little voice in the back of my head told me that I was being awfully noble for someone who had flinched when push came to shove.
A little voice told me that I was making excuses. Some part of me that doesn't trust much and believes in even less whispered that I'd simply been afraid to say no to a being who could probably make me long for death if I denied her. Either way, it was too late for questions now. I'd made the bargain, for better or worse. If I didn't want it to end badly, I'd better start figuring out how to get out of it without being swallowed up in fairy politics. I wouldn't do that by taking the case of Ronald Rule, I was pretty damn sure. Mab wouldn't have offered it if she hadn't thought it would get me further entangled than I already was. Maybe she had me in a metaphysical arm lock, but that didn't mean I was going to jump every time she said frog. I could figure out something else. And besides, I had other problems on my mind. There wasn't much time to spare before the council meeting that evening, so I got my things together and got ready to leave. I paused at the door with that nagging feeling I get when I'm forgetting something. My eyes settled on my stack of unpaid bills, and I remembered. Money. I'd come here to get a case, to make some cash, to pay my bills. Now I was hip deep in trouble and heading straight out to sea, and I hadn't gotten a retainer or made one red cent. I swore at myself and pulled the door shut behind me. You'd think as long as I was gambling with my soul, I would have thought to get Mab to throw in $50 an hour plus expenses. I headed out to start taking care of business. Traffic in Chicago can be the usual nightmare of traffic in any large American city, but that afternoon's was particularly bad. Stuck behind a wreck up ahead, the Beetle turned into an oven, and I spent the while sweating and wishing I wasn't too much of a wizard for a decent modern air conditioner to survive. That was one of the hazards of magical talent. Technology doesn't get along so well when there's a lot of magic flying around. Anything manufactured after World War II or so seems prone to failure whenever a wizard is nearby. Stuff with microcircuits and electrical components and that kind of paraphernalia seem to have the most trouble. But even simpler things, like the Beetle's air conditioner, usually can't last long. Running late, I dropped by my apartment and waded through the wreckage looking for my gear for the meeting. I couldn't find everything, and I didn't have time to get a shower. The refrigerator was empty, and all I could find to eat was a half-wrapped candy bar I'd started and never finished. I stuffed it into my pocket, then headed for the meeting of the White Council of Wizardry, where I was sure to cut a devastating swath with my couth, hygiene, and natural grace. I pulled into the parking lot across the street from the McCormick Place complex, one of the largest convention centers in the world. The White Council had rented one of the smaller buildings for the meeting. The sun hung low in the sky, growing larger and redder as it dropped toward the horizon. I parked the Beetle in the relative cool of the lowest level of the parking garage, got out of the car, and walked around to the front to open the trunk. I was shrugging into my robe when I heard a car coming, engine rumbling and rattling. A black 37 Ford pickup, complete with rounded fenders and wooden slat sides on the bed, pulled into the empty space next to mine. There wasn't any rust on the old machine, and it gleamed with fresh wax. A weathered shotgun rode on top of a wooden rack against the rear wall of the passenger compartment, and in the slot beneath it sat a worn old wizard's staff. The Ford crunched to a halt with a kind of dinosaur solidity, and a moment later the engine died. The driver, a short, stocky man in a white T-shirt and blue denim overalls, opened the door and hopped down from the truck with the brisk motions of a busy man. His head was bald, except for a fringe of downy white tufts, and a bristling white beard covered his jaw and jowls. He slammed the door shut with thoughtless strength, grinned, and boomed. "Hoss, good to see you again." "Ebenezer," I responded. If without the same ear-ringing volume, I felt myself answer his grin with my own and stepped over to him to shake his offered hand. I squeezed hard, purely out of self-defense. He had a grip that could crush a can of spinach. "You'd better take that shotgun down. Chicago PD is picky about people with guns." Ebenezer snorted and said, "I'm too old to go worrying about every fool thing." "Well, what are you doing out of Missouri, sir? I didn't think you came to council meetings." He let out a barking laugh. "The last time I didn't, they saddled me with this useless teenage apprentice. Now I don't hardly dare to miss one. They might make him move in again." I laughed. "I wasn't that bad, was I?" he snorted. "You burned down my barn, Hoss, and I never did see that cat again. He just lit out and didn't come back after what you did with the laundry." I grinned.
Way back when, I'd been a stupid 16-year-old orphan who had killed his former teacher in what amounted to a magical duel. I'd gotten lucky, or it would have been me that had been turned into a briquette instead of old Justin. The council has 7 laws of magic, and the first one is, thou shalt not kill. When you break it, they execute you. No questions asked. But some of the other wizards had thought I deserved lenience, and there was a precedent for using lethal magic in self-defense against the black arts. I had been put on a kind of horrible probation instead, with any further infraction against the laws punishable by immediate summary judgment. But I'd also been 16 and legally a minor, which meant I had to go someplace, preferably where the council could keep an eye on me and where I could learn better control of my powers. Ebenezer McCoy had lived in Hog Hollow, Missouri, for as long as anyone could remember, a couple of centuries at least. After my trial, the council packed me off to his farm and put him in charge of the remainder of my education. Education, to Ebenezer, meant a lot of hard work on the farm during the day, studying in the evening, and getting a good night's sleep. I didn't learn much magic from him, but I'd gotten some more important stuff. I'd learned more about patience, about creating something, making something worthwhile out of my labor. And I'd found as much peace as a teenager could expect. It had been a good place for me then, and it had given me the kind of respect and distance I'd needed. I would always be grateful. Ebenezer frowned past me, squinting at the beetle. I followed his gaze and realized that my car looked like it had been pounded with bloody hailstones. The toad blood had dried to dark caramel brown, except where my windshield wipers had swept it away. Ebenezer looked back at me, lifting his eyebrows. "Rain of toads," I explained. "Ah!" He rubbed his jaw and squinted at me, and then at the cloth wrapped around my hand. "And that?" "Accident in the office. It's been a long day." "Uh-huh. You know, you don't look so good, Hoff." He looked up at me, his eyes steady, frowning. I didn't meet the look. We'd traded a soul gaze years before, so I wasn't afraid of it happening again. I just didn't want to look at the old man and see disappointment there. "I hear you've been getting into some trouble up here." "Some," I admitted. "You all right?" "I'll make it." "Uh-huh. I'm told the senior counsel's pretty upset," he said. "Could mean trouble for you, Hoss." "Yeah," I figured. He sighed and shook his head, looking me up and down, nose wrinkling. "You don't exactly look like a shining example of young wizardry, and you're not going to make much of an impression wearing that." I scowled, defensive, and draped the stole of rich blue silk over my head. "Hey, I'm supposed to wear a robe. We all are." Ebenezer gave me a wry look and turned to the pickup. He dragged a suit container out of the back and pulled out a robe of opulent dark fabric, folding it over one arm. "Somehow I don't think a plaid flannel bathrobe is what they had in mind." I tied the belt of my old bathrobe and tried to make the stole look like it should go with it. "I can't use my good robe as a litter box. Like I said, it's been a long day, sir." He grunted and took his stumpy old wizard staff off the gun rack. Then he drew out his scarlet stole and draped it over the robe. "It's too hot to wear this damn thing out here. I'll put it on inside." He looked up, pale blue eyes glinting as he swept his gaze around the parking garage. I frowned at him and tilted my head. "We're late. Shouldn't we be getting to the meeting?" "In a minute. Some people want to talk before we close the circle." He glanced aside at me and said more quietly, "Senior counsel." I drew in a sharp breath. "Why do they want to talk to us?" "Not us. You. 'Cause I asked them to, boy. People are scared. If the senior council allows things to come to an open vote of the entire council, it could go badly for you. So I wanted some of them to get a chance to meet you for themselves before they start making choices that could get you hurt." Ebenezer leaned back against his truck and folded his arms across his belly, bowing his head with his eyes squinted almost completely shut. He said nothing more. Nothing about him betrayed any tension, from the set of his bull neck and the solid shoulders to the stillness of his gnarled, work-hardened hands, but I felt it in him, somewhere. I said quietly, "You're going out on a limb for me, aren't you?" He shrugged. "Some, maybe." I felt the anger run hot in my belly, and I tightened the muscles of my jaw, but I made an effort to keep my voice even. Ebenezer had been more than my teacher. He had been my mentor at a time when I hadn't had anything else left to me. He'd helped me when a lot of other people wanted to kick me when I was down, or more accurately, decapitate me while I was down. I owed him my life in more than one sense. It would be wrong for me to lose my temper, no matter how tired or hurt I was. Besides, the old man could probably kick my ass. So I managed to tone my answer down to, "What the hell do you think you're doing, sir? I am not your apprentice anymore. I can look out for myself." He didn't miss the anger. "Guess I'm not much of a poker player," he looked up at me and said. "I'm trying to help you, boy." "I've got all the help I can stand already," I told him. "I've got vampires breathing down my neck, toads falling from the sky. I'm about to get evicted from everywhere. I'm late to the council meeting, and I'm not going to stand around here and suck up to members of the senior council to lobby their vote." Ebenezer thrust out his jaw, rapping his staff against the ground to emphasize his sentences. "Harry, this is not a game. The wardens and the Merlin are dead set against you. They will move. Without support in the senior council, you're in trouble, hoss." I shook my head and thought of Mab's glacial gaze. "It can't be much more than I'm in already." "The hell it can't. They could make a sacrificial lamb out of you." "They will or they won't. Either way, I'm not going to start brown-nosing the council now, senior or otherwise. Harry, I'm not saying you need to get on your knees and beg, but if you would just..." I rolled my eyes. "What? Offer a couple of favors? Sell my vote to one of the blocks? Fuck that. Pardon my French. I've got enough problems without..." I broke off abruptly, narrowing my eyes. "You're the last one I would expect to be telling me to get involved in council politics." Ebenezer scowled at me. "Oh? Yeah. In fact, the last time I checked, you told me the whole swill-spouting pack of lollygagging skunk wallows could transform one another into clams, for all you cared." "I did not say that." "Did so." Ebenezer's face turned red. "Boy, I ought to..." "Save it," I told him. "Go ahead and punch me or whatever, but threats just aren't hitting me like they used to." Ebenezer snorted at me and slammed his staff on the concrete once more before turning and stalking several paces away. He stood there for a minute, muttering to himself. Or I thought he was muttering. After a minute, the sound resolved itself into swallowed laughter. I scowled at his back. "What?" I demanded. "Why are you laughing at me?" Ebenezer turned out to an open parking space across the row and said, "There, are you satisfied?" I never felt a whisper of power, not even a breath of magic stirring against me. Whatever veil had been used, it was beyond anything I could have even attempted. I'm not exactly a neurosurgeon when it comes to magic. I've had my moments, but mostly I muddle through by shoving a lot of power into my spells until it doesn't matter if half of it is slopping out. Magically speaking, I'm a brawny thug and noisy as hell. This veil was good, almost perfect, completely silent. Way better than I would be able to do any time in the next couple of decades. I stared in abrupt shock as it fell, and two people I hadn't sensed at all simply flickered into existence in front of me. The first was a woman, better than 6 feet tall. She wore her gray hair coiled in a net at the base of her neck. She had already put on her robes of office, black silk nearly the same color as her skin, and her purple stole echoed the gems at her throat. Her eyebrows were still dark, and she had one of them arched as she regarded Ebenezer, then me, with a completely unamused expression. When she spoke, her voice was a low, rich alto. "Lollygagging skunk wallows?" "Maddie," Ebenezer began, laughter still flavoring his words. "You know how I get when I'm talking about council politics." "Don't you Matty me, Ebenezer McCoy," she snapped. She looked past my old mentor to focus on me. "Wizard Dresden, I am less than amused with your lack of respect toward the White Council." I lifted my chin and glared down at the woman without meeting her eyes. It's a tough trick to learn, but if you're motivated enough, you can do it. "That's a coincidence. I'm not terribly amused with you spying on me." The black woman's eyes flashed, but Ebenezer cut in before either of us could gather any more steam. "Harry Dresden," he said dryly, "meet Martha Liberty."
She shot him a look and said pointedly, "He's arrogant, Ebenezer. Dangerous." I snorted. "That's every wizard ever," Martha continued as if I hadn't spoken. "Bitter, angry, obsessive." Ebenezer frowned. "Seems to me he has a good reason to be. You and the rest of the senior council saw to that." Martha shook her head. "You know what he was meant to be. He's too great a risk." I snapped my fingers twice and hooked my thumb at my chest. "Hey, lady, he's also right here." Her eyes flashed at me. "Look at him, Ebenezer. He's a wreck. Look at the destruction he has caused." Ebenezer took two quick, angry steps toward Martha. "By challenging the Red Court when they were going to kill that young woman?" "No, Maddie. Haas didn't cause what's happened since. They did. I've read his report. He stood up to them when they damn well needed standing up to." Martha folded her arms, strong and brown against the front of her robes. "The Merlin says..." "I know what he says," Ebenezer muttered. "By now I don't even need to hear him say it. And as usual, he's half right, half wrong, and all gutless." Martha frowned at him for a long and silent moment. Then she looked at me and asked, "Do you remember me, Mr. Dresden?" I shook my head. "They had a hood on me all through the trial, and I missed the meeting Warden Morgan called a couple years back. They were taking a bullet out of my hip." "I know. I never saw your face before today." She moved then, lifting a slender staff of some dark reddish wood, and walked toward me, the staff clicking with each step. I faced her, bracing myself, but she didn't try to meet my gaze. She studied my features for a long moment, and then said very quietly, "You have your mother's eyes." An old pain rolled through me. I barely managed more than a whisper in response. "I never knew her." "No, you didn't." She lifted one wide, heavy hand and passed it through the air on either side of my head, as though smoothing my hair without touching it. Then she raked her eyes over me, staring intently at my bandaged hand. "You're hurt. You're in great pain." "It isn't bad. It should heal in a few days." "I'm not talking about your hand, boy." She closed her eyes and bowed her head. Her voice came heavily, slowly, as though her lips were reluctant to let the words pass them. "Very well, Ebenezer. I will support you." She stepped back and away from me, back to the side of the second person who had appeared. I'd almost forgotten about him, and looking at him now, I began to see why. He contained a quality of stillness I could all but feel around him, easy to sense but difficult to define. His features, his bearing, everything about him blended into his background, swallowed by that stillness, patient and quiet as a stone beneath the moon and sun. He was of innocuous height, 5'8", maybe 5'9". His dark hair was plaited in a long braid, despite age, that seamed his features, like bronze leather under a scarlet sun, warm and worn. His eyes, beneath silver brows, were dark, inscrutable, intense. Eagle feathers adorned his braid. A necklace of bits of bone circled his throat, and he had a beaded bracelet wrapped around one forearm, which poked out from beneath his black robe. One weathered hand gripped a simple, uncarved staff. "Haas," Ebenezer said, "this here is Listens to Wind, but that's always been too much of a mouthful for me, even for a genuine Illinois medicine man. I just call him Injun Joe." "How," I began, maybe some kind of irony could be found in the first part of asking, "How did he do?" But something scratched at my foot and I left off the rest. I let out a yelp and jumped away from a flash of fur near my feet without stopping to see what it was. It had been that kind of day. I tripped over my own staff and fell down. I scrambled over to my back to put my legs between my face and whatever snarling thing might be coming for me, drawing back one foot to kick. I needn't have bothered. A raccoon, and a fairly young one at that, stood up on its hind legs and chittered at me in annoyance, soft gray fur bristling wildly as though it had been fitted for an animal several sizes larger. The raccoon gave me what I swore was an irritated look, eyes glittering within the dark mask of fur around them, then ran over to Injun Joe's feet and neatly scaled the old man's wooden staff.
It swarmed up Injun Joe's arm to perch on his shoulder, still chittering and squeaking. I managed. How do you do? The raccoon chirruped again, and Injun Joe tilted his head to one side and nodded.
Good. But little brother is irritated with you. He thinks anyone with that much food should share it.
I frowned, then I remembered the half-eaten stale candy bar in my pocket.
Oh, right.
I pulled it out, broke it in half, and held it out to the raccoon.
Peace?
Little brother let out a pleased squeak and darted back down Injun Joe's arm and staff to my hand. He snatched the candy and then retired a few feet away to eat it. When I looked up, Injun Joe stood over me, offering his hand.
Little brother thanks you. He likes you too. How do you do, Wizard Dresden?
I took his hand and got to my feet.
Thanks, listens to wind.
Ebenezer interjected. Injun Joe.
Injun Joe winked one grave eye at me.
The redneck hillbilly doesn't read. Otherwise he'd know that he can't call me that anymore. Now I'm a Native American Joe.
I wasn't sure I was supposed to laugh, but I did.
Injun Joe nodded, dark eyes sparkling. Then he murmured, "The one you knew as Tara West sends her respects."
I blinked at him.
Injun Joe turned to Ebenezer and nodded, then walked slowly back to Martha's side. Ebenezer let out a satisfied grunt.
"Fine. Now where's the Russian? We haven't got all day."
Martha's expression became remote. Injun Joe's face didn't change, but he moved his eyes to the tall wizard beside him. No one spoke, and the silence grew thick enough to choke on. Ebenezer's face went very pale, and he suddenly leaned hard on his staff.
"Simon," he whispered. "Oh, no."
I stepped up beside Ebenezer. "What happened?"
Martha shook her head. "Simon Petrovich, senior council member, our vampire expert. He was killed less than 2 days ago. The whole compound in Archangel, Ebenezer. All of them."
"I'm sorry." Ebenezer shook his head slowly. His voice was a pale shadow of its usual self.
"I've been to his tower. It was a fortress. How did they do it?"
"The warden said that they couldn't be sure, but it looked like someone let the killers pass the defenses. They didn't get away unscathed. There were the remains of a half-dozen nobles of the Red Court, many of their warriors, but they killed Simon and the rest."
"Let them in?" Ebenezer breathed. "Treachery? But even if it was true, it would have to be someone who knew his defenses inside and out."
Martha glanced at me, and then back at Ebenezer. Something passed between them in that look, but I couldn't tell what.
"No," Ebenezer said. "That's insane."
"Master to student, you know what the wardens will say."
"It's buffalo chips. We'll never get past the senior council."
"Eben," Martha said gently, "Joseph and I are only two votes now. Simon is gone."
Ebenezer took a blue bandana from his pocket of his overalls and rubbed it over his pate.
"Damnation," he muttered. "Guts and damnation."
I looked at Ebenezer and then at Martha.
"What?" I asked. "What does this mean?"
She said, "It means, Wizard Dresden, that the Merlin and the others on the council are preparing to bring allegations against you, accusing you of precipitating the war with the Red Court and placing the responsibility for a number of deaths on your head. And because Joseph and I no longer have the support of Simon on the senior council, it means that we cannot block the Merlin from laying it to general vote."
Injun Joe nodded, fingers absently resting on Little Brother's fur.
"Many of the council are frightened, Hoss Dresden. Your enemies will use this opportunity to strike through them. Fear will drive them to vote against you."
I shot Ebenezer a glance. My old mentor traded a long look with me, and I saw his eyes stir with uncertainty.
"Hell's bells," I whispered. "I'm in trouble."
Chapter 5. A heavy silence followed, until Ebenezer flexed the finger of one hand and his knuckles popped.
"Well, who's up for Simon's place?"
Martha shook her head.
"I suspect the Merlin will want one of the Germans."
Ebenezer growled.
I got 50-year seniority on every mother's son of them.
It won't matter, Martha said. There are too many Americans on the senior council already for the Merlin's tastes.
Injun Joe scratched little brother's chest and said, Typical. Only real American on the senior council is me. Not like the rest of you Johnny-come-latelys. Ebenezer gave Injun Joe a tired smile. Martha said,
The Merlin won't be happy if you decide to press a claim now. Ebenezer snorted.
Aye, and I can tell you how that breaks my heart.
Martha frowned, pressing her lips together. We'd best get inside, Ebenezer. I'll tell them to wait for you.
Fine, my old teacher said, his words clipped. Go on in. Without a further word, Martha and Injun Joe departed, black robes whispering.
Ebenezer slipped into his robe and put on his scarlet stole. Then he took up his staff again and strode determinedly toward the convention center. I kept pace silently and worried. Ebenezer surprised me by speaking.
How's your Latin coming, Hoss? You need me to translate?
I coughed.
No, I think I can manage. All right. When we get inside, hang on to your temper. You've got a reputation as a hothead for some reason.
I scowled at him. I do not.
And for being stubborn and contrary.
I am not. Ebenezer's worn smile appeared for a moment, but by then we had reached the building where the council was to meet. I stopped walking, and Ebenezer paused, looking back at me.
I don't want to go in with you, I said. If this goes bad, maybe it's better if you have some distance from me.
Ebenezer frowned at me, and for a second I thought he was going to argue. Then he shook his head and went into the building. I gave him a couple of minutes, and then walked up the steps and went in. The building had the look of an old-time theater, high arched ceilings, floors of polished stone laid with strips of carpet, and several sets of double doors leading into the theater itself. The air conditioning had probably been running full blast earlier, but now there was no sound of fan or vent, and the building inside felt warmer than it probably should have. None of the lights were on. You couldn't really expect even basic things like lights and air conditioning to keep running in a building full of wizards. All the doors leading into what was apparently an actual theater were closed, except for one pair, and two men, wearing dark council robes, scarlet stoles, and the gray cloaks of the wardens, stood before them. I didn't recognize one of the men, but the other was Morgan. Morgan stood nearly as tall as I did, only with maybe another 100 pounds of solid working man muscle. He had a short beard, patchy with brown and gray, and he wore his hair in a long ponytail. His face was still narrow, sour, and he had a voice to match it.
Finally, he muttered upon seeing me. I've been waiting for this, Dresden. Finally, you're going to face justice.
I see someone had a nice big bowl of fanatic O's this morning, I said. I know you don't like it, Morgan, but I was cleared of all those charges, thanks to you, actually.
His sour face screwed up even more. I only reported your actions to the council. I did not think they would be so, he spat the word out like a curse, lenient.
I stopped in front of the two wardens and held out my staff. Morgan's partner lifted a crystal pendant from around his neck and ran the crystal over the staff and then over my head, temples, and down the front of my body. The crystal pulsed with a gentle glow of light as it passed over each chakra point. The second warden nodded to Morgan, and I started to step past him and into the theater. He put out one broad hand to stop me.
No, he said. Not yet. Get the dogs.
The other warden frowned, but that was all the protest he made. He turned and slipped into the theater, and a moment later he emerged, leading a pair of ward hounds behind him. In spite of myself, I swallowed and took a step back from them.
Give me a break, Morgan. I'm not enspelled, and I'm not toting a bomb. I'm not the suicidal type.
Then you won't mind a quick check, Morgan said. He gave me a humorless smile and stepped forward.
The wardhounds came with him. They weren't actually dogs. I like dogs. They were statues made of some kind of dark gray-green stone, their shoulders as high as my own belt. They had the gaping mouth and the two big eyes of Chinese temple dogs, complete with curling beards and manes. Though they weren't flesh, they moved with a kind of ponderous, liquid grace, stone muscles shifting beneath the surface of their skins as if they had been living beings.
Morgan touched each on the head and muttered something too vague for me to make out. Upon hearing it, both ward hounds focused upon me and began to prowl in a circle around me, heads down, the floor quivering beneath their weight. I knew that they'd been enchanted to detect any of the countless threats that might attempt to approach a council meeting, but they weren't thinking beings, only devices programmed with a simple set of responses to predetermined stimuli. The wardhounds had saved lives often before, there had also been accidents. And I didn't know if my run-in with Mab would leave a residual signature that might set the wardhounds off. The dogs stopped, and one of them let out a growl that sounded soothingly akin to bedrock being ripped apart by a backhoe. I tensed and looked down at the dog standing to my right. Its lips had peeled back from gleaming dark fangs, and its empty eyes were focused on my left hand, the one Mab had wounded by way of demonstration. I swallowed and held still and tried to think innocent thoughts.
"They don't like something about you, Dresden," Morgan said. I thought I heard an almost eager undertone to his voice. "Maybe I should turn you away, just to be careful."
The other warden stepped forward, one hand on a short, heavy rod worn on his belt. He murmured,
"Could be an injury, if he's hurt. Wizard blood can be pretty potent. Moody, too. Dog could be reacting to anger or fear through the blood."
"Maybe," Morgan said testily. "Or it could be contraband he's trying to sneak in. Take the bandages off, Dresden."
"I don't want to start bleeding again," I said.
"Fine. I'm denying you entrance, then, in accordance with..."
"Damn it, Morgan," I muttered. I all but tossed my staff at him. He caught it and held it while I tore at the makeshift bandages I'd put on my hand. It hurt like hell, but I pulled them off and showed him the swollen and oozing wound. The wardhound growled again and then appeared to lose interest, pacing back over to sit down beside its mate, suddenly inanimate again. I turned my eyes to Morgan and stared at him hard.
"Satisfied?" I asked him.
For a second I thought he would meet my gaze. Then he shoved my staff back at me as he turned away.
"You're a disgrace, Dresden. Look at yourself. Because of you, good men and women have died. Today you will be called to answer for it."
I tied the bandage back on as best I could and gritted my teeth to keep from telling Morgan to take a long walk off a short cliff. Then I brushed past the wardens and stalked into the theater. Morgan watched me go, then said to his partner, "Close the circle." He followed me into the theater, shutting the door behind him, even as I felt the sudden, silent tension of the warden's closing circle around the building, shutting it off from any supernatural access. I hadn't ever actually seen a meeting of the council. Not like this. The sheer variety of it all was staggering, and I stood staring for several moments, taking it in. The space was a dinner theater of only moderate size, lit by nothing more than a few candles on each table. The room wouldn't have been crowded for a matinee, but as a gathering place for wizards, it was positively swamped. The tables on the floor of the theater were almost completely filled with black-robed wizards, variously sporting stoles of blue, gold, and scarlet. Apprentices in their muddy brown robes lurked at the fringes of the crowd, standing along the walls or crouching on the floor beside their mentors' chairs. The variety of humanity represented in the theater was startling. Canted Oriental eyes, dark, rich skins of Africa, pale Europeans, men and women, ancient and young, long and short hair, beards long enough to tuck into belts, beards wispy enough to be stirred by a passing breeze. The theater buzzed in dozens of languages, of which I could only identify a fraction. Wizards laughed and scowled, smiled and stared blankly, sipped from flasks and soda cans and cups, or sat with eyes closed in meditation. The scents of spices and perfumes and chemicals all blended together into something pervasive, always changing, and the auras of so many practitioners of the art seemed to be feeling just as social, reaching out around the room to touch upon other auras, to echo or strike dissonance with their energies, tangible enough to feel without even trying. It was like walking through drifting cobwebs that were constantly brushing against my cheeks and eyelashes. Not dangerous, but disconcerting, each one wildly unique, utterly different from the next.
The only thing the wizards had in common was that none of them looked as scruffy as me. A roped-off section at the far right of the hall held the envoys of various organizations of allies and supernatural interests, most of whom I had only a vague idea about. Wardens stood here and there where they could overlook the crowd, gray cloaks conspicuous amid the black and scattered brown robes. But I somehow doubted if they were as obtrusive as my own faded blue and white flannel. I garnered offended looks from nearly everyone as I walked past, mostly white-haired old wizard folk. One or two apprentices near my own age covered their mouths as I walked past, hiding grins. I walked around for an open chair, but I didn't spot one, until I saw Ebenezer wave at me from a table in the front row of the theater nearest the stage. He nodded at a seat next to him. It was the only space available, and I joined him. On the theater stage stood 7 podiums, and at 6 of them stood members of the senior council, in dark robes with purple stoles. Injun Joe Listens to Wind and Martha Liberty stood at 2. At the center podium stood the Merlin of the White Council, a tall man, broad of shoulder and blue of eye, with hair falling past his shoulders in shining pale waves and a flowing silver beard. The Merlin spoke in a rolling basso voice, Latin phrases gliding as smoothly from his mouth as from any Roman senator's.
Et quia cum ita sint, sensio iom nos demerate rias contendinas, et a magna riava grave, deliberare ed ist illud bilum contra catertalum rebrum.
And given the circumstances, I move to dispense with the usual formalities in order to discuss the most pertinent issue before us, the war with the Red Court. Consensum habimus? All in favor? There was a general murmur of consent from the wizards in the room. I didn't feel any need to add to it. I tried to slip unnoticed into the seat beside Ebenezer, but the Merlin's bright blue eyes spotted me and grew shades colder. The Merlin spoke, and though I knew he spoke perfectly intelligible English, he addressed me in Latin, quick and liquid, but his own perfect command of the speech worked against him. He was easy to understand.
Ah, magus Dresdanus, protidur adus nebus dum labello, quod in separus disameos, exo omni parte retuo tua pro hoc, camatiotus, nobis placit.
Ah, Wizard Dresden. How thoughtful of you to join us in discussions of the war you started. It is good to know that you have such respect for this council. He delivered that last while giving my battered old bathrobe a pointed look, making sure that everyone in the room who hadn't noticed would now. Jerk. He let silence fall afterwards, and it was left to me to answer him, also in Latin. Big, fat jerk. Still, it was my first council meeting as a full wizard, and he was the Merlin, after all, and I did look pretty bad. Plus, Ebenezer shot me a warning glance, and I swallowed a hot answer and took a stab at diplomacy. I said,
Ego sum misir magus Merlinus, dulor edio longi mitenit, opios es miri, alharte es visipula.
Sorry, Merlin, it's been a long day. I meant to have my other robe. Well, that's what I tried to say. I must have conjugated something wrong, because when I finished, the Merlin blinked at me, expression mild.
Quod est?
Ebenezer winced and asked me in a whisper,
Haas, you sure you don't want me to translate for you?
I waved a hand at him. I can do it. I scowled as I tried to put together the right words and spoke again.
Excusatium, vobis pro vestue, moi adatue, etium tardavante facio.
Please excuse my lateness and appearance. The Merlin regarded me with passionless, distant features, evidently well content to let my mouth run. Ebenezer put his hand over his eyes.
What?
I demanded of him in a fierce whisper. Ebenezer squinted up at me.
Well, first you said, I am a sorry excuse, Merlin. A sad, long day held me. I need me a different laundress.
I blinked.
What?
That's what Merlin said. Then you said, excuse to you for my being dressed, and I also make lately.
I felt my face heat up. Most of the room was staring at me as though I was some sort of raving lunatic, and it dawned on me that many of the wizards in the room probably did not speak English. As far as they were concerned, I probably sounded like one.
Goddamn correspondence course. Maybe you should translate for me, I said.
Ebenezer's eyes sparkled, and he nodded with a grave expression.
Happy to.
I slipped into my seat while Ebenezer stood up and made an apology for me, his Latin terse and precise, his voice carrying easily throughout the hall. I saw the gathered wizard's expressions grow more or less mollified as he spoke. The Merlin nodded and continued in his textbook perfect Latin.
Thank you, Wizard McCoy, for your assistance. The first order of business in addressing the crisis before us is to restore the senior council to its full membership. As some of you have doubtless learned by now, senior council member Petrovic was killed in an attack by the Red Court 2 days past. A gasp and a low murmur ran through the theater. The Merlin allowed a moment to pass. Past conflicts with the Red Court have not moved with this kind of alacrity, and this may indicate a shift in their usual strategy. As a result, we need to be able to react quickly to further developments which will require the leadership provided by the full membership on the Senior Council. The Merlid continued speaking, but I leaned over to Ebenezer.
Let me guess, I whispered. He wants to fill the opening of the Senior Council so that he'll be able to control the vote.
Ebenezer nodded.
He'll have 3 votes for sure then, and most times 4. Well, what are we going to do about it? You aren't going to do anything, not yet.
He looked at me intently.
Keep your temper, Hoss. I mean it. The Merlin will have 3 plans to take you down.
I shook my head.
What? How do you know that? He always does things that way,
Ebenezer murmured. His eyes glittered with something ugly.
A plan, a backup plan, and an ace in the hole. I'll shoot down the first one, and I'll help you with the second. The third is all yours, though.
What do you mean? What plan?
Hush, Hoss. I'm paying attention.
A balding wizard, with bristling white eyebrows and a bushy blue beard, his scalp covered in flowing blue tattoos, leaned forward from the far side of the table and glared at me.
Shh!
Ebenezer nodded at the man, and we both turned back to face the stage. And it is for this reason, the Merlin continued, that I now ask Klaus Schneider, as a long-standing senior wizard of impeccable reputation, to take on the responsibility of membership in the senior council. All in favor?
Martha glanced at Ebenezer and murmured,
A moment, honored Merlin. I believe protocol requires that we open the floor to debate.
The Merlin sighed.
Under normal circumstances, Wizard Liberty, of course, but we have little time for the niceties of our usual procedures. Time is of the essence. So, all in...
Injun Joe interrupted.
Wizard Snyder is a fine enchanter, and he has a reputation for skill and honesty, but he is young for such a responsibility. There are wizards present who are his senior in expertise and the art. They deserve the consideration of the council.
The Merlin shot Injun Joe a frown.
Thank you for your perspective, Wizard listens to wind. But though your commentary is welcome, it was not asked for. There is no one present, senior to Wizard Schneider, who has not already declined a seat upon the senior council. And rather than run through the meaningless nominations and repeated declinations, I had intended, Ebenezer cut in, sotto voice, but loud enough for the Merlin to hear him, in English.
You had intended to shove your favorite down everyone's throats while we were too worried to notice.
The Merlin fell abruptly quiet, his eyes falling on Ebenezer in a sudden pointed silence. He spoke in a low voice.
Go back to your mountain, Ebenezer. Back to your sheep. You are not welcome here, and never have been.
Ebenezer looked up at the Merlin with a toothy smile, Scots creeping back into his vowels.
Aye, Alfred, laddie, I know.
He switched back to Latin and raised his voice again.
Every member of the council has a right to speak his mind on these matters. You all know how important the appointment of one senior council member is. How many of you believe this matter too serious to leave to a consensus? Speak now.
The theater rumbled with a general aye, to which I added my own voice. Ebenezer looked around the room and then raised an eyebrow at the Merlin. I could see frustration not quite hidden on the old man's face.
I could almost taste his desire to slam his fist down on the podium, but he controlled himself and nodded. Very well. Then, in accordance with procedure, we will offer the position to the senior-most wizards present. He looked to one side, where a slim-faced, prim-looking wizard sat with a quill, a bottle of ink, and pages of parchment. Wizard Peabody, will you consult the registry? Peabody reached under his table and came out with a bulging satchel. He muttered something to himself and rubbed some ink onto his nose with one finger, and he opened the satchel, which held what looked like a couple of reams of parchment. His eyes glazed over slightly, and he reached into the papers seemingly at random. He drew out a single page, put it on the desk before him, nodded in satisfaction, and then read in a reedy voice.
Wizard Mountjoy.
Research trip to Yucatan, Martha Liberty said. Peabody nodded.
Wizard Gomez.
Still sleeping off that potion, provided a gray-cloaked warden standing by the wall.
Peabody nodded.
Wizard Lucchese.
Sabbatical,
said one blue-bearded and tattooed wizard behind me. Ebenezer frowned, and one of his cheeks twisted into a nervous tick. It went on like that for close to a quarter hour. Some of the more interesting reasons for absence included he got real married, living under the polar ice cap, and pyramid-sitting, whatever that was. Peabody finally read, with a glance up at the Merlin,
Wizard McCoy.
Ebenezer grunted and stood. Peabody read another half-dozen names before stating, Wizard Schneider. A small, round-cheeked man, with a fringe of gauzy white down over his scalp and a round belly stretching his robes, stood up and gave Ebenezer a brief nod. Then he looked up at the Merlin and said, in Latin, with a heavy Germanic accent,
While I am grateful for the offer, honored Merlin, I must respectfully decline your nomination in favor of the Wizard McCoy. He will serve the council more ably than I.
The Merlin looked as though someone had grated slices of lemon against his gums.
Very well, he said. Do any other senior wizards here wish to present themselves for consideration over Wizard McCoy?
I was betting no one would, especially given the looks on the faces of the wizards nearby. Ebenezer himself never moved his eyes from the Merlin. He just stood with his feet spread wide apart and planted, his eyes steady, confident. Silence fell over the hall. The Merlin looked around the hall, his lips pressed tightly together. Finally, he gave his head a very slight shake.
All in favor?
The room rumbled with a second more affirmative.
Aye.
Very well, the Merlin said, his upper lip twisting and giving the words an acid edge.
Wizard McCoy, take your place among the senior council.
There was a murmur of what sounded a bit like relief from those in the hall. Ebenezer glanced back and winked at me.
One down, two to go, he murmured. Stay sharp.
Then he hitched up his robes and stumped onto the stage to the empty podium between Martha Liberty and Injun Joe.
Less talking, more doing,
he said loudly enough to be heard by the whole hall. There's a war on.
Precisely what I was thinking, the Merlin said, and nodded to one side. Let us address the war.
Warden Morgan, would you please stand forward and give the council the warden's tactical assessment of the Red Court?
An oppressive silence settled over the room, so that I could hear every sound of Morgan's boots as he stepped up onto the stage. The Merlin moved aside, and Morgan placed a glittering gem or crystal of some kind upon the podium. Behind that he set a candle, which he lit with a murmured incantation. Then he framed the candle with his hands and murmured again. Light streaked from the candle into the crystal in a glowing stream and sprang up out of the crystal again in a large cone stretching up above the stage several yards across the top. Within the cone of light appeared a spinning globe of the earth, its continents vaguely misshapen, like something drawn from a couple of centuries past. A murmur ran through the room, and Bluebeard at my table muttered in Latin,
Impressive.
Bah,
I said in English. He stole that from Return of the Jedi. Bluebeard blinked at me, uncomprehending. I briefly debated trying to translate Star Wars into Latin and decided against it. See, I have a common sense, too.
Morgan's low voice rumbled out in Latin phrases, rough but understandable, which meant he spoke it better than me. Jerk.
The flashing red spots on the map are locations of known attacks of the Red Court and their allies. Most of them resulted in casualties of one form or another.
As he spoke, wildly scattered motes of red color began to form on the globe like glowing lights of a Christmas tree.
As you can see, most of the activity has taken place in Western Europe.
A mutter went through the room. The old world was the domain of the old school of wizardry, the maintain secrecy and don't attract attention way of thinking. I guess they have a point, given the Inquisition and all. I don't belong to the old school. I have an ad in the Yellow Pages under Wizards. Big shocker, I'm the only one there. I have to pay the bill somehow, don't I?
Morgan droned on dispassionately. We have known for a long time that the main power center of the Red Court is somewhere in South America. Our sources are under pressure, but it has become difficult to get any information out of the area. We have had advance warning of several attacks, and the wardens have managed to intercede with minimal losses of life, with the exception of the attack at Archangel.
The globe paused in its spinning, and my eyes fastened on the glowing point of light on the northwest coast of Russia.
Though it is presumed that Wizard Petrovic's death curse took a heavy toll on his attackers, no one in his household survived the attack. We don't know how they got past his defenses. It would appear that the Red Court may have access to information or aspects of the art that they have not had before.
The Merlin stepped back to the podium, and Morgan collected his crystal. The globe vanished.
Thank you, Warden, the Merlin said. As we expected, from the Council records, our various retreats and paths through the Never Never are threatened. Frankly speaking, ladies and gentlemen, the Red Court holds us at a disadvantage within the mortal world. Modern technology so often disagrees with us that it makes travel difficult under the best of circumstances and unreliable in a time of conflict. We vitally need to secure safe paths through the Never Never, or else take risk being engaged and overwhelmed in detail by an opponent who can move more rapidly than we. To that end, we have dispatched missives to both queens of the sea, ancient Mai.
My eyes flickered to the podium, to the Merlin's left, where stood another of the senior council members, apparently the ancient Mai. She was a tiny woman of oriental extraction, her skin fine and pale, her granite-colored hair worn in a long braid curled up at the back of her head and held with a pair of jade combs. She had delicate features only lightly touched by the passage of years, though her dark eyes were rheumy. She unfolded a letter written upon parchment and addressed the council in a creaky but firm voice.
From Summer we received this answer. Queen Titania does not now, nor will she ever choose sides in the disputes of mortal and anthrophage. She bids both council and court alike to keep their war well away from the realms of Summer. She will remain neutral.
Ebenezer frowned and leaned forward to ask.
And from Winter?
I twitched. The ancient tilted her head and regarded Ebenezer in perfect silence for a moment, somehow implying her annoyance at his interruption.
Our courier did not return. Upon consulting records of former conflicts, we may confidently assume that Queen Mab will involve herself, if at all, in a time and manner of her own choosing.
I twitched more. There was a pitcher of water on the table along with some glasses. I poured a drink. The pitcher only rattled up against the cup a little. I glanced back at Bluebeard and saw him regarding me with a pensive gaze. Ebenezer scowled.
Now, what is that supposed to mean?
The Merlin stepped in smoothly.
It means that we must continue whatever diplomacy we may with Winter. At all costs, we must secure the cooperation of one of the She-Queens, or at least prevent the Red Court from accomplishing an alliance of its own until this conflict can be resolved.
Martha Liberty lifted both eyebrows.
Resolved, she said, her tone pointed. I would have chosen a word like finished myself.
The Merlin shook his head.
Wizard Liberty, there is no need for this dispute to devolve into an even more destructive conflict. If there exists even a small chance that an armistice can be attained, the black woman's voice lashed out at the Merlin, harsh and cold.
Ask Simon Petrovic how interested the vampires are in reaching a peaceable settlement.
Contain your emotions, wizard, the Merlin replied, his voice calm. The loss of Petrovic strikes each of us deeply, but we cannot allow that.